Are you ready to explore how people coordinate, to build and empower your community, to take action, solve problems, to coordinate without any central authority?
What?
Bring in the OGs of the pre-crypto decentralized coordination space, together with the pioneers of the cutting edge technologies, to fuse their ancient knowledge with the latest tools in order to fight coordination failures, slay Moloch, and continue the endless search for the holy grails of decentralized coordination. Welcome to the front lines of coordination. Fuck. My brain is already melting. I hope you survive.
Right, welcome Token Bryce to the Frontiers of Coordination podcast.
Thanks for having me around. Glad to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, as I told you already, you're the first guest on this DAO podcast that's going to be talking about the shitty side of DAOs. Like, so far it's mostly been talking about how great DAOs are and how they're the future of coordination, the future of work and all of that. And now we're going to talk about the shitty side, and it's been time. So yeah, happy to have you here.
Yes. I mean, if you want to initiate your DAO bearishness on the podcast, I think you just found the biggest DAO beer ever. So that's a good one. Interesting to see how it's going to go.
All right, perfect. So before we get into all of that, you want to tell us a bit about your journey, like how you got into the space and the DAO space more specifically?
So yeah, I'm a bit of a weird duck, so you could guess from my accent that I am French. Initially, I got into the space about 5-6 years ago when DeFi was starting. And since the start, I've been really, pardon my English, but autistic DeFi. This is what interests me. I dabbled a little bit in NFTs. I follow remotely what happened at the protocol level, but really my core thing is DeFi, and this is where all my interest lies. So I did a lot of things around that topic over the years. I worked with a few companies, Monolith, Paraswap, Liquity. I started the DeFi Friends community 4 or 5 years ago to talk about DeFi in French, because that was also something important to me, maximizing the accessibility, inclusivity of DeFi. Back then, the conversation was exclusively in English, and I still think the conversation is way too centered in English. And by the way, when we're going to talk about governance, it's also an absolute shame how there is no attempt at having governance in any other language than English. Kind of shows something about the inclusivity and accessibility of DAOs. So yeah, I've been a bit militant in that side of DeFi. Did some live shows. I have a blog at TokenBryce6YZ. And since October, I launched a non-profit association to nudge DeFi towards maximize resilience called the DeFi Collective. Maybe we'll touch on it later.
Sounds good. And is that how you got into Aave as well, through the French DeFi community?
I got into Aave because I am kind of known in the space for my core expertise lies around stablecoin and liquidity management. And the two topics are very heavily correlated. And so, it's kind of how I ended up on this liquidity committee for Go, I think.
Okay. Yeah, and one of the questions was supposed to be, what do you love about DAOs since you were a part of the DAO? But as you said, like, you didn't join because of the DAO, but because you're like a liquidity management expert. So we can talk about what you don't love about DAOs.
Yes, technically I was hired by the DAO. I mean, I've been involved in a few DAOs even before that. I've set up the governance at Paraswap. So I have an idea of what we're talking about for sure. What I don't like about DAO to begin with is most of it are unnecessary in the sense that I operate under this logic for protocol design that is called the governance minimization, but it's often misunderstood. People kind of think that, you know, it means you want to see no governance at all or things like that. That's an optimal state of things. But this is not what governance minimization is. One way to sum it up very nicely has actually been words from Aiden Adams, the founder of Uniswap. And he talked about this tier list when it comes to designing your protocol with 3 tiers. The first tier, the ideal one, being pure automation. So when you have a given problem, you find a way to automate. There is nobody needed. The thing just freaking works. That's the best way to decentralize, of course. The second tier is the incentivization. So it's a situation where you need people to do something and you distribute an incentive for them to do so, but you still have a decentralized, distributed, various group of people performing the task. So it's decently decentralized. The worst one in that tier list is the governance. So when you cannot automate nor incentivize, then you put it into the hands of governance to handle the problem. And some topics are like such, you know, so for instance, a money market deciding which collateral to add. So far, we don't know how to automate that. We haven't found good ways to incentivize healthy community of actors to handle that. So giving that to governance makes sense. But I think this framework is important to have in mind to analyze all the decisions and responsibilities that are given to governance. Should they really be handled by governance? Because governance is really the worst solution in any given situation. And so in that regard, should be minimized. So for instance, and I've been saying that for 5 years now, I can't believe it's still running. But for instance, the decision over an interest rate for a borrowing protocol should not be decided by governance, like MakerDAO is doing for the stable the interest rate when you borrow DAI. Because it makes absolutely no sense. It's not agile, not adapting to the market situation, it creates trust issues, it creates many problems that you can simply avoid by having an algorithm predictable that manages interest rate. And you can enable the governance to update the algorithm under certain condition. But I think we all understand that, you know, hey, come borrow this stablecoin. You have a set of code that governs what interest rate you pay versus, hey, come borrow this stablecoin. You can wake up one day and maybe governance decided to quadruple the interest rate and there is nothing you can do about it. The first situation is obviously better as a user, but also truer to the DeFi ethos, because that's also key, you know, we came to do that. So it's really with that in mind that I say governance minimization, that really using governance as a last resort. And I know the other component of governance minimization that is often not well understood is understanding the inner danger that is governance. So when governance is implemented anywhere, the first priority should be to protect your protocol from its own governance. Treat governance like poison, because it is poison. It will be eventually. Everywhere when we see some institution gaining some power, it's only a matter of time where to reach a situation where this power is abused for some form of personal benefits. So this needs to be accounted for at the design level. And here, again, sorry, but it did seem right. A good example comes from Uniswap. So imagine your listeners are aware, but you know Uniswap V3, most of the protocol, pretty much everything is immutable, but for one thing, which is what we call the fee switch, which is this possibility for the DAO to vote in a fee collection. But here too, Hayden, or I don't know if it's him, or the rest of the Uniswap team, have been very careful. Because the parameter the governance can vote in is bounded at the contract level. So it means they cannot decide to one day wake up and vote in that they take 100% of the fees from the LP. No, they can implement a fee collection bounded in a range that is, if I recall correctly, please double check me, but I think it goes from 1/10 to 1/4 of the fees the LP collect. So the worst case scenario is an LP still gets 75% of the fees he's getting now. This is what I mean by protecting the protocol from its governance.
That makes complete sense. And okay, so that's on the theory side. Now let's hear about how it went, how it goes wrong in practice. Let's hear the latest live example.
The latest live example. I mean, there are many ways it can go down in practice. But you know, I think essentially the original scene is that. I've been doing DeFi, as I was telling you, since it exists, 5 years, something like that. And I remember in the early days, we were seeing the beginning of those governance. And we were very well aware that we were at the stone age of governance. We were laughing at how plutocratic it was. This logic of one token, one vote, a whale can swing the vote, another whale can prevent a decision just because he has so much token. It seemed kind of obvious to everyone that this was, you know, flows of an early system that was designed very simplistically, like, oh, one token, one vote. Well, here we are 5 years later, 6 years later, depending on the protocol, and it's exactly the same system with not a single change to it. We're still in a pure plutocracy. So that's probably the biggest problem with governance right now is it's not even that it is shit. We've established that it's a worse solution and it's can be abused in many ways. But it's that I don't see any will from any governance to try to better itself. I don't see any protocol launching with a way to implement governance that is aiming for something fairer, more efficient, more transparent, more decent, if we are simple. There is not even an attempt to make it. And there are a few things here and there, but really it's minimal. And when I talk about this, I talk about the big protocols, you know, the Aave, the Maker, the Compound, the big names of DeFi you know of. Quote me one that doesn't operate under one token equal one vote. VCs have massive bags, they can delegate left and right as they want. There is no such things, you know. The innovation only happens at the edge. So to solve this one, that's the first core issue with governance I have. So I think you have understood the distribution of governance power. That's how we will like categorize this broad issue. One of the solutions I see for that is a very simple concept that is starting to get implemented in very small protocol for now, that I call the governance by usage or by exposure. If you think about it, take Aave, for instance. You might be supplying 5 billion stablecoin to Aave. If you own zero Aave token, you have zero voting power. In front of you, you might have a whale that owns 50 million worth of Aave token. It can make critical changes to the protocol almost on its own. Maybe it needs a bit more, but you get my idea. This guy might be exposed $0 to the Aave protocol. He just owns a governance token and he gets massive voting power. You're exposed massively to the protocol, you have no voting power. I think that's like one of the core flaw we need to fix. So one way to solve this is to simply, you know, instead of having a useless, valueless governance token that then you need governance power to try to give it value, well, you get rid of that useless governance token and instead you distribute voting power based on effective exposure to the protocol. So if your protocol is a money market, how much capital do you have at risk? If it's a DEX, how much, you know, capital you have in liquidity pools? You get the idea. I think that would be a massive improvement to begin with.
It would still be plutocratic, but at least like skin in the game.
Exactly, because right now it's worse. It's not only plutocratic, but exactly as you said, there is technically no skin in the game. Yes, of course, people who own Aave tokens, they overall want the Aave protocol to do well, because else the Aave token will lose value, but it's not the same kind of exposure as if they were putting their assets at risk in the protocol itself.
And then another way of like avoiding this sort of like voting on everything with plutocratic governance, there are committees, and you were a part of one such committee.
Yeah, so we're getting to the Go committee, sorry, I'm sidetracked a bit. So yeah, there could be committees in certain situations, in DAOs. So in the case of Aave, Aave launched a stablecoin, the Go, in July, I think, of last year. And predictably, the Go has faced serious issues with its peg since its inception. It was trading down to 94 cents, I think, at the lowest. And so the governance, after a few months, took the decision to appoint what was called back then the Go Liquidity Committee, and now has been rebranded to Aave Liquidity Committee, which was essentially a multi-sig, 4 signers required out of 7 or 8, I'm not sure exactly. It evolved a bit, the membership. And this multi-sig was also given some assets from the Aave DAO, some stablecoins, some ESA, and some strategic assets, as they're so-called, to implement value strategies to help support the peg of the Go stablecoin. So I was indeed a member of that committee since its inception in October and assume its leadership from November to early January, essentially.
Yeah, tell us about those 3 months.
So for the shortcomings now that the stage is set. For those 3 months. So this is more going to be about committee governance and broad governance now. But essentially, the core problem I had with the committee, despite trying my best to make it work as good as possible, was that his operating scope was not clearly defined. And there was especially a few discussions that divided the committee. Because essentially what happened is governance voted while transferring some assets to the committee as to how they should be used. And some members of the committee, myself included, were not in agreement that this was the best usage possible of those assets to support the liquidity on Go. So this small fraction of the committee, because it wasn't just myself, tried to win over the other member of the committee to essentially challenge governance. So our idea was to push a counter proposal to suggest to governance that a different usage of the funds should be done. Most of the committee members were not seeing things in that manner and decided that a form of middle ground would be implemented that was essentially the worst of both worlds, because the assets that we deemed suboptimal, so that was SD CRV for usage of CRV. So some of the CRV that the committee had were transformed into that asset, SD CRV, but that another share was staked as CVX CRV, violating then the what has been voted by governance. So it created quite a bit of drama and tensions, obviously. You know, some members of the governance felt like their opinions were disrespected. And yeah, at the end of the day, it generated an unhealthy amount of tension for misusage of assets, if we are trying to put some word on this.
And what do you think people were doing this?
Yeah, so I published an article as I essentially resigned from the committee shortly after the deployment of those assets. And I was bold or dumb enough to use the word conflict of interest, because I still think this is what it was. So I think the unwillingness of most community members to challenge governance was due to the fact that the protocol that was receiving the assets, StakeDAO, SDCRV, they were a large owner of its own token. So it was a bit like sending money to friends, like sending money to a protocol you have positive exposure to. I think that was a driving factor, because I still stand my ground that at the technical level, there was no defending the usage of CRV as SDCRV if the goal was to maximize the liquidity driving capabilities of the committee.
StakeDAO, you say? They've done some shady things in their time.
Oh, not just in that time, all the time, yes.
DeFi time is their time. What was I going to say? But yeah, you also mentioned how the members of the committee are not all exactly experts in liquidity management, or maybe even none of them besides you. So how does it work? Like, how do they even get picked to be members of the committee?
Yeah, so the topic of expertise is actually quite funny, because there are a few that are knowledgeable. So remaining in the committee, there is one profile in particular that I would consider competent in the incentive layer of DEX, which is Fig, the founder of Paladin, a bribing marketplace. Now, for the funny story, is one of the most competent member liquidity-wise of the committee, myself excluded, was actually excluded from the committee very early on for political reasons, because some of other community members had a beef with him and essentially pulled some shenanigans to push him out. So it kind of shows you that expertise was not a criteria. And yeah, this is what I was highlighting in the post, is that's probably one of the biggest challenge with such committee, is that often, if it's the governance voting for them, the members that would be proposed and the members that would be put forward are the one with the biggest public platform, but not necessarily the more apt or competent for the task. So it often ends up being a popularity contest to determine who ends up in those committees. You know, it's a bit like the multisigs of, you know, many protocols have multisigs. And kind of quiet down now, but I remember a couple of years ago, it was all the hype. It was a big fashion to You know, you would have a multisig that is like, I don't know, 9 signers total, and you would put 4 from your protocol and 5 external. All right. And the 5 external, there were literally maybe 20 or 30 people within DeFi that were all around, always the same name, you know, because they were well-known face. Oh, we're going to put Mark Zeller from Avi because everybody knows him and he's doing good and blah, blah, blah. Whatever. I'm not saying anything about Mark, but to give you an example. Or we're going to put a guy from Yuan Finance, or we're going to put Stani on the multisig. And at the end of the day, you ended up with a lot of recurrence on the multisig because it was just, you know, they wanted popular, well-known, respected figures. I think it's a similar situation on those DAO committees. That, yeah, it's often, again, the public platform, the public presence, the public perception of a profile. This is most of what will determine its odds of being appointed to a given committee more than actual expertise or relevance to the topic at play.
Yeah, I would say, like, in some way, it was better early on because, like, the motivation was more so, like, just bringing legitimacy, like, using them to bring legitimacy and trust. Well, in this case, it's just like most popular ending up winning, and it's is it like based on token voting? Is that how they like choose the delegates?
No, not even. So it was a proposal made by someone with an initial membership of the committee proposing the proposal, and the DAO voted to accept that as such.
Got it. So it was like they weren't individually chosen, but like one proposal.
They were essentially suggested by the proposal writer and accepted by the governance.
Got it.
But they weren't individually chosen through votes by governance, is what I meant.
And do you think the outcome would have been any different if they were chosen one by one?
I'm not so sure at this point, because then we fall back into the other troubles. You know, who are the biggest holder? What do they vote for? And, you know, it's a situation that is getting a bit messy, you know, at all level. Because, for instance, okay, I need to shield myself a bit here, but to give you an idea, after this controversial decision was taken and the deployment of assets of stake were done, one of the members involved in that vote has been hired by Stake DAO on some professional capacity through one of its structure. So it kind of shows you, you know, this conflict of interest going very deep, where you can end up with a guy working for a company that manages assets for DAO, and then he's on a committee that manages the Go funds, and all of this committee decide to deploy the funds in the protocol associated to the DAO of the assets he managed with the other company.
Right. It sounds like we're going to arrive at the same kind of revolving doors between the government and the industries.
Exactly. Revolving door, that's a word, yeah. And that's kind of what I put in my article too. I talk about the arrival of newspeak and how we see situations very similar to in real life politics, you know, where you get a guy that is elected and says to you, oh, I'm going to fight for the purchasing power of the lower class. And you look calmly at what he does in his 5 years of reign. And it's like, okay, this guy did everything to do tax cut for the riches and actually steal money from the poorer people of the countries than the other way around. We already have situations like that in DeFi too. And it reaches back to, you know, beginning of this talk. Governance is horror. Governance brings the worst in human beings. Governance is always abused given enough time and power. So governance should be avoided at all costs, minimized when necessary.
Yeah, in Metagame we had like a full democracy, and I still always say like it's like voting is always the last resort for me. Like it's the worst possible way to resolve decisions by like putting it up for vote. Like, you know, you need people who know shit to agree on shit. And like if it's up to people, if it cannot be automated, which would be obviously preferable, but it's easier in DeFi projects than like DAOs that aren't that much, that don't operate fully on chain.
Yes.
Yeah. No wonder that governance stopped being such a hot topic like over the last year. Like I remember like a year or two ago, everybody was like governance. And then like over the past year, like it's been crickets. Like nobody's talking about governance. Nobody's talking about DAOs.
Oh, I mean, yeah, nobody is talking, but there is still a happening and a big movement that happened over the last few years is the professionalization of that governance. Where now you have whole companies that have been built to do that, you know, to be delegates in various protocols. Or in the case of Avi, you have structures that are created for the sole purpose of being governance delegate in the community. So yeah, I don't think that professionalization of governance is in its best interest. Because, you know, then it becomes in politics, like politicians, again, where, you know, the main focus of those structures is to preserve their funding, no matter the cost to the protocol. So they will not fight for what they believe is best or more aligned, if that means ruffling some feathers from large holders of the coin, because that would mean risking the renewal of the contract, for instance. So it misaligns incentives even further.
Right, you have people keeping quiet and then the other people just like doing what they're incentivized to do, which is pushing private interests forward. And how prevalent would you say this is across the DeFi DAO space or DAO space in general?
Well, it's quite common. You don't have to look at the ownership of voting power on a given protocol to get an idea. But it started a few years ago, and it's still the case, it was quite in fashion for VCs, so large holder of governance token. Usually when they vote directly, and when people see, you know, oh, this VC voted with like 5% or 10% of the vote, it's not such a good look in terms of how decentralized the protocol is. So to kind of make it a better look, because a lot of this is just about optics, you know, it doesn't change much. What they started doing is they would pick a random student blockchain association somewhere, usually in the United States, and drop gazillions of tokens worth of delegation on those poor guys. Sometimes those were just two random guys in a usually high-end university. You know, you don't delegate from Northville, California State University. No, no, you delegate to Cambridge or to something like that. You see what I mean? University you know the name of. And so that would be a way to, you know, make it a bit more optically decentralized, let's say it like that. But at the end of the day, it's just moving the centralization point to another end. And yeah, those students' blockchain associations were not necessarily the most acute voters, let's say it like that.
Yeah, I remember drama from a while ago in Uniswap as well, when this university association got, I don't know how many millions to... For a proposal that didn't really sound like it should get so many millions. Let's put it like that.
Yes.
I saw a tweet today about this sort of thing, like how DAOs bleed money through proposals. And then I was saying how this, there's going to be this sort of proposal mining or proposal verification DAOs or organizations, sort of like the financial audits companies exist in the Web2 world. They're going to need to exist in the Web3 world as well, because like DAOs are just bleeding money to shit proposals.
Yes. I can just show you something that is pretty interesting. Is we did talk shit and compared a lot to real world politics. But there is one thing that is really cool in DeFi is you can see all the drama and all the misusage of funds happening on chain, and you can track it very precisely. So that's sizable improvement compared to real world politics. Well, usually you learn about it years after, when finally some journalists decided to do some investigation. So what I'm showing on screen now is the current streams of payment there is for the various service providers to the Avi DAO. And you can see it's quite consequent, essentially. So let's try to put a date that makes sense. But so for instance, right now, let's do by end date. Can we? No, we can't. But anyway, there is like a large amount. So, you know, the biggest provider would be, we can start by amount maybe. So that's a bug bounty. So let's ignore this one because it's a bit different. But so this one running into December is a 1 million GO stream. So GO is dollar stablecoin, so $1 million. You have $800K for Chaos Lab until November of this year. Another $800K to Chaos Lab. $750K until March of this year for Broad Ghost Developing, which is essentially developing the next version of Avi. The Grants DAO, another $600K. Avi Chain Initiative, a governance service provider, $300K until March. $220K to Kapartki, treasury manager that is also involved in many other DAOs and has some conflict of interest. Token Logic, another kind of governance service provider involved in several DAO, $200K until June. So you see, we're mostly looking at stream until June, September of this year, and we already covered full $5 million. So it kind of gives you an idea of the yearly runaway is well above $10 million just for Avi. Do we have an estimation of? No, it's not too informative more than that.
And this is all public?
This is all public, of course, yes, because it has to be voted. So I can show you actually how it looks like. But it looks like, you know, a given service provider will come to the governance forum and be like, hey, I can provide this service for this period of time and I need this much. Let me see if I can find, do they have a funding of the liquidity committee, interesting. Because they had quite a bit of assets, but... So for instance, you know, that's not a service provider, but that's how like the liquidity committee is asking for 500K more Go for its operations. But let me try to find a service provider. And you see like the amount of proposal that there is on a daily basis too. The kind of a weekly daily basis, that kind of shows you like we scored just 1 week worth of proposal so far. It's a big problem that you have on many governance, not just Avi. It's just a governance bloat, essentially, where, you know, it's a full-time job to be participant, committed, engaged, observant, attentive participant in those governance.
And most of these committees in general, like, or these people who are supposed to review proposals, are they even paid? I know that used to be a problem before. Well, I remember people complaining.
Yes, people complain that they weren't paid, but now the problem is pretty much only people getting paid are involved now. So you have the other problems, you know. I'm not sure what is the best, to be honest. Damn, trying to find a service provider proposal, sorry. Oh, yes. So for instance, that's a service provider. Oh, yeah, I should have searched for service provider. But so that's how it would look like. So this is Kapartki, the treasury manager and providing value service and essentially offering its services for an initial period of 180 days for a budget of 400K Go. So, you know, 2K words, good relationship, 400K moving to your structure. It's a decent investment. And so, yes, it's turning into a skill to obtain those payment streams, but they're not necessarily correlated to results.
Right.
Nothing against this provider in particular. I just wanted to highlight that for me, it's quite crazy that it happens like that.
Do you want to share any more examples? Or I wanted to also ask you to like recap the biggest issues.
I guess for the example, that's enough. So the biggest issue is governance or committees?
both like the biggest issues that you've experienced or seen in the DAO space.
Yeah, so I guess at the committee level, a big thing we still haven't discussed too much is this question of transparency, essentially, and reporting. So, you know, often committees are appointed with no requirement to report. So, for instance, you know, just you would expect that if you hire some guys and you put $1 million in their hand, you would force them to report on a monthly basis. What is the usage of the funds? What are the results obtained? This is very rarely the case. It wasn't the case in the case of the Go Liquidity Committee. When under my reign, if I may put it like that, I produced reports, but that was essentially out of good faith of me. Nothing through governance had us to do so. And I find this a bit flabbergasting, you know, that it's again seem normal to empower people with decent amount of money to perform a task and accept that they do not report and do not ask them to report. So probably that's something, if I can push some good practices here, if you hire a committee to do whatever, the first thing you should demand out of that committee is frequent reporting on whatever the activity is.
Yeah, if you hire anybody or any DAO or any service provider for anything, you should require them for reporting.
And yeah, for the governance, we really fall back to this thing that I was saying about the Stone Age of governance, you know, where we're still on the Stone Age of governance. Don't let yourself be fooled, you know, by the professionalization of it, those structures that are created, payment streams and whatsoever, if the core is still one token, one vote, token being a governance token, completely uncorrelated to the exposure of assets to the protocol, then, you know, I don't care what is on top. It's like, hey, Bryce, there is this amazing stablecoin built on BSC. I don't give a fuck. If it's on BSC, I don't give a fuck. You see what I mean? Because the base layer is uninteresting to me in terms of resilience. There is nothing you could build on top that would be interesting to me. because I care about resilience. Just to give you an example, it's the same thing for governance. You know, if your base layer is plutocratic, one token, one vote, no assets exposure required, I don't care what is built on top. It's uninteresting, inefficient, will be captured, will be directed toward serving private interest of the people better positioned in that governance, but will certainly not achieve the best interest in the protocol over the long term and some form of resilience, sturdiness in the long run too. So yeah, for those who, if there is any listening to this and launching protocols or whatsoever, try things, try whatever. This is what we have right now is literally the worst possible. So I don't know, try giving voting power randomly to any people who interact with your smart contract. I can guarantee you that's already a better solution than what we have now. So it's just to give you an idea of how low the bar is. Try whatever, you will be doing better than what we have. Of course, you can try to be a bit smart about it, but I just want to, you know, alleviate any scare that, oh, I don't want to try because I don't know, or they all do like this, so I'm going to do the same. No, they all do something literally atrocious from every matrix. So try something, or even better, do without governance if you can.
Right. Yeah, that's the next question. Like, how would you advise people to minimize governance? Like, how do you see governance minimization happening?
It's like what I was saying earlier. It really depends on the topics of decision. Some are really hard to envision in a purely automated manner. So, you know, for example, the addition of collateral to a money market or to a stable coin. There could be an algorithmic way to look about this, but it still seems quite risky. So what I want to say is some topic will still require governance, but many topics already can be done without. So whenever it's possible, it's definitely worth exploring. And, you know, sometimes it's also worth considering, do I need this feature? Maybe, you know, if that means adding governance, maybe I get rid of that feature and I get rid of governance. That's also, you know, could be a desirable trait. So, you know, Liquity, a team I worked with and a protocol I really liked, made that decision regarding the onboarding of collateral. They couldn't find a way to do it in an algorithmic manner that wasn't creating a danger to the protocol without governance. So they simply said, okay, LUSD is minted with ETH collateral only and will be as such for the remaining of its existence. And it's doing pretty well for it. So I guess my point is like to really think when you hit a wall where governance is unavoidable, do you really need that feature?
So your main advice for governance would be don't have governance. It's like try to avoid it at all costs.
That's an ideal situation. I think that's quite clear from what I just discussed. But again, there are topics where it's hard. So if you can't avoid it, minimize it, frame it, hold it accountable as much as possible, pay it as little as possible. Do not fall for shining lights of public perception in your choice of delegates, of committees or whatsoever. The most public persons are usually not the best one to handle such tasks. And yeah, that should be a good start.
All right. Yeah. Tell us about the nice things, not in terms of governance, but your project, the DeFi Collective.
Yeah, happy to. So DeFi Collective is a Swiss nonprofit association that was launched in October. The goal recently found a satisfying tagline is I frame it simply as using DeFi to better DeFi. Expanded a little bit, the collective owns assets and deploy those assets in the most resilient DeFi protocols. It helps them supporting their growth. It also enables the collective to produce revenues that are more than sufficient to cover its operation and then compound its treasury to extend increasing amount of support to what we call the mission critical protocols, to the most resilient DeFi protocols. Overall, the vision of the collective is to support builders of the most resilient protocols in all relevant ways. So right now it's really focused, because this is where we have most edge, on liquidity support. So helping them grow, develop, and sustain liquidity for their tokens. And the vision is to progressively expand to other areas, awareness, protocol design, helping them with code reviews and audits, and really be a sort of like all-in-one DeFi incubator. But I guess the main difference is we Collective is not for hire. It's not a structure that someone can come, drop a bag of money on the table to get its services. The Collective, again, is self-funded, so it doesn't need anyone's money, and also self-appointed. So it decides which projects it will help based on very demanding conditions on how the protocol is designed and essentially pertaining about how resilient the protocol is.
And how does it work? Like, do projects apply, or do you find them out in the wild and approach them?
Yeah. So currently it's more of the latter, and also, you know, the funds are not infinite, so the amount of projects supported is a bit limited for now. But it's actually the next step for the Collective. We're working on this right now. We're going to edit those protocol guidelines that explicit or a review framework for the protocols. And after that, on Saturday's Live, we will open essentially application of protocols who think they can match them. They will be able to be reviewed. So we still have to figure out, you know, how to organize this, because we're going to get spammed with requests to review protocols. We are aware of that. And, you know, there is little interest for us to review yet another, mutable degen DEX on the Avalanche blockchain. So we need to have some form of sanitization criteria. But yeah, eventually this is how it's going to work. People are going to be able to submit projects. They will be reviewed by the Collective, which will produce a report on the given project. If the project do not match the guidelines of the Collective, the report will still be published, but the project will not be supported by the Collective. And if the project matches the guideline, then it enters a pool of projects we can support depending of its state and all means. We will extend support in various ways, but at least, you know, all brain power support will be granted to all projects matching the guidelines.
And then you vote to choose them.
No.
All right. And how long have you been doing that?
So it's been live since October. You'll find more info on DeFiCollectiveAllAttached.org for the people interested. And it's really scaling up nicely. So initially it was launched with just the 3 board members. So board members, because, you know, it's also an association in the real world. And since then we've hired 3 contributors that assist a board member. And we're looking to hire more. In terms of financial, it's also going fairly well. So you will find the treasury report on our blog that I just highlighted, DeFiCollective.org, because that's also something we try to lead by example with, where we report in great details about our treasury activities every month and every quarter. So yeah, check it out. For the DGEN that are only concerned about, the earnings, the first quarter of activity was around $70,000 of net earnings over the quarter, so after all expense covered. And we expect this to double in the second quarter. We'll have to be known. And yeah, overall, the whole Collective is structured as, as I was saying, we're very demanding with the projects we support, but we try to be also very demanding with ourselves. So we have various policies we are implementing progressively. Right now, the reporting policy is live. A treasury policy will follow shortly, as well as the protocol guidelines. And those are cornerstone documents that are essentially implemented at the association level, so in the real world, that constrain our activity in certain ways. So all of this is done to, lead by example, hold ourselves to high standards, but also because Collective is an association and we hope to progressively structure it and increasingly open it up to the public. It's a bit like a DeFi protocol in the real world in the way that, you know, it started as a 3-person multisig that are like, trust us, bro, don't worry, we're not going to run away with the money. And the goal is to progressively set up those documents, those processes, onboard more people, and turn it into something actually more matching his name, something collective.
Got it. I love it. And I love that you're a DAO bear, but you're building a collective, which is like ideal version of a DAO. So like, yeah, that's... I think all DAOs should be more like collectives and more like co-ops and like projects that have been doing this in the real world for a long time and like that we're not learning from enough.
Mm.
And then, yeah, the final question is, so you said you're earning, but your projects can hire you and you're incubating projects. So you're earning from the, you said you're using DeFi protocols, you're like providing liquidity and staking. So I guess a big part of earnings come from that. But you also charge something, or like you get some tokens from the project you incubate, or like, yeah, what's the whole model?
No. So we don't charge. Collective cannot be hired. So those 70K of earnings are pure DeFi earnings obtained through liquidity providing, staking, vote incentives. And this does not account for the appreciation of the collective assets, which we track, but we do not report as revenue, of course, because it's, you know, unless it's sold, it's not realized. But yeah, we've been quite lucky on this front too. You know, the timing of the launch was quite decent. Again, October of last year. So essentially, yeah, the total amount of assets controlled by the collective has already doubled since its inception. And we expect that trend to keep going up too. In terms of, so we don't receive payments, but we are an association and we're open to donations. Some projects that are part of the project we support, but not only, have been, I don't know how to say, kind and forward-facing enough to donate to the collective. So that was also the initial source of funding and is still a decent source of funding. But those are not included in that 70K revenue figure that I just reported. It's a separate revenue source.
That's awesome. So you don't charge anything. You just like find cool projects to support and you support them and that's it.
Yeah, that's the goal. And it allows us to work with projects that, well, don't have much to pay us with, but are relevant in terms of what they're doing. So, you know, I was mentioning, for instance, this idea of governance power by exposure. There is a stablecoin CDP protocol implementing that called Dyad that we are supporting liquidity-wise. Quite decently, because about a fourth to a third of the total liquidity on the stablecoin is directly the consequence of the collective's action. And so, you know, we can do that simply because we don't need payment from Dyad or whatever other team.
Right. And it's super cool. And is it public? How much capital are you using to generate the revenue?
Yes, it is on the blog. So we report with a 2 weeks delta at the end of every month. So meaning, you know, essentially a week from now with 7 months. So next week, you're going to have the report for February period. The last figure we reported for treasury was around $1.5 million at the end of February. But it's going up quite decently since.
That's impressive. That's like 10% of total like revenue, basically.
Yes, but I mean, we have positions, liquidity driving tokens that are, 4 years locked that have come with several conditions, but that are also very productive in terms of yield. So that allows us to generate this income.
All right, so we should follow you on chain for some free alpha.
That's why we are not directly advertising the address. We thought about registering an ENS, like, you know, collective.es or something like that. But then we figured it actually became a kind of a mini game because, you know, through our treasury report, you can get an idea of the positions of the collective with a 15 days delay, but we don't change positions so much. So essentially, if you have the minimal unchained sleuthing capabilities and you read a report, you should be able to figure out the address by yourself.
Okay. That's good. Some Easter eggs for people.
Yes.
All right. Yeah. Thank you very much for coming on and sharing some bad shit about DAOs, because as I said, it's been all too positive. And yeah, thank you. It's been great.
My pleasure to balance it out. I hope quite a lot. Yes. Thanks for having me, Pez.
Awesome. All right. Thank you again. And have a great rest of the day.
Cheers. You too.